T.C. Boyle's got a new one out. That's unusual. It's been 18 months. Where is he? San Miguel, his latest novel. He's online with us right now from San Miguel. No, you're not from San Miguel. Are you there now, Tom?
Yes, hello.
You're actually on San Miguel? Is that possible?
No, Michael, and as you mentioned, ships at sea, we should point out to your audience that it's not particularly easy to get to San Miguel.
No.
You might know that I don't do well at sea.
You don't do well at sea because you have a canoe and it's very
actually, if
choppy.
I am out in my kayak, there's no problem. But on a big boat where it tends to roll a bit, I do have problems.
Yeah. So, Tom, are these the last of the Channel Islands now? Are there more that we're going to read about?
Yes, Michael, I think this will be the last of the Channel Islands. I should say, too, for the benefit of your audience there in your landlocked state, that recently in going out to Santa Cruz Island, the one I wrote about in When the Killing's Done last year, I had a wonderful experience. I had to come home and wash whale snot out of my hair.
Not the first time
true.
For you, I suspect.
True enough. Yes. You know, there's a lot of wildlife in the sea, and the captain stopped the boat, and there we were charmed to see a humpback mother and her calf, you know, 50 feet away from us. But, of course, they do tend to blow off occasionally, and we happen to be downwind of them. And by the way, the smell isn't bad at all. It's sort of like when you, in summer, open a can of sardines and leave it on the sidewalk for a week.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. That was all one sentence, too. That's. By the way, do you read your reviews at all? I mean, they're always good, but do you?
I used to when I was a young man and naive. Now I only read the best three or four. My editor will get them and edit them for me and say, look, here are the people who love you, and then there's another pile of the people who despise me, and I don't really bother with them. In fact,
no, there's very few
of
those.
Use an English expression to deal with my critics.
Yeah.
I micturate on them from a great height.
Okay, I'm going to look that up and get back to you on that.
Well, I don't think it's good. Four-letter word. I'm not sure if we're allowed to use it on.
Okay. Well, the reviews I saw are they're all good and everything. But there's the guy from the Telegraph said you tend to use careening wrong. Did you see that?
I'm sorry, Michael. I missed that one.
Yeah.
Can you clarify for me?
No, I can't. I don't know what he's talking about. They're English. They think they own the language, though. You know. Said and you.
Well,
you
yeah. Yes.
Careening, and you tend to put things on, say something was on top of something else often.
Well, you know, I'm going to have to correct that. I'll have to have things on the bottom of everything else from now on.
I don't know that part to make sense.
As for our English cousins,
I think it was
over there, I did go on this book tour this fall and entertain them for a week or so. The weather in London was perfectly wonderful, just what I want. It was driving down rain and 50 degrees for the entire week of October that I was there. I do appreciate the Brits very much, except that I'd appreciate them more if they appreciated me more, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, no, both the reviews were good. I thought that was, you know, that was so English to bring up a word misuse. One word, careening, or maybe it was cavorting. No, I think it was careening.
Well, you know, sometimes the publisher doesn't get out and pay these people enough money.
Yeah.
And so you have a little disgruntlement on the other end.
And the fact of it is that we use words differently than the English do. It's not to say that it's wrong. It's just saying it's not not their way of saying it. Don't you find?
I do. I really don't have much to say about it, except that I have been on English tours in which, you know, you go 10 miles out of London and no one can understand what anyone else is saying, including me. And by the way, I don't know if people are aware of this. I have been at parties in London where I'll go out to the men's room and come back, and they talk just like we do. All of that that high-fluting language and that accent, they put that on for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Really. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
San Miguel, now, is it? It's the something-most of the Channel Islands. Is it the northernmost? Or the westernmost?
The northern and westernmost, and the very wildest. We were talking about going out in the boat. It's an hour and a half out to Santa Cruz Island, and as you know, this is our part of our national park system, the least visited of our national parks because of what I mentioned earlier. You have to hang your head over the side of a boat and puke for an hour and a half just to get there.
Yeah.
San Miguel, however, is 4.5 hours out over even rougher seas, and so I used a very simple expedient in getting there. The airplane.
Yeah. Is there a place to land on?
There's just a little grass strip in front of the only building on San Miguel, and that is the Ranger's little house where I was able to spend the night. And incidentally, when you're coming in on the airplane, mm-hmm. you see the elephant seals. There are hundreds of them stretched out on the beach there like big bloated sausages. It's a very wild place. And in fact, when I got off the airplane, I said to the Ranger, I don't know if this is a violation or if I should talk to Fish and Game, but do you think it'd be all right if I mated with one of the elephant seals? And he said, you know, that is a violation of every order. So I restrained myself.
Okay, well, I'm going to miturate on that one or something. Think about that. Okay, well, that threw me off. I got to admit, I didn't see you coming from that direction. Okay. Now, explain your fascination with the Channel Islands, because this is your second book on them. Actually, the last one, When the Killing's Done, was about that different island, but the same chain.
Yes.
What is your deep love and fascination with these islands? Is it because can you see them?
Back to
can
the you previous s- comment here? You
yes.
know, hey Michael, I have to cover myself.
Yes.
You know me well. I am a nature lover. Mm-hmm. Okay, and so this extends to the elephant seals as well, and the females are really kind of cute. At any rate, I've been looking out my window. I've been living up in Santa Barbara for 20 years now, and
okay.
I look out my window, and I can see the Channel Islands.
Oh, you can
for
see
many,
them.
Many years, I
okay.
ignored them. There they are. There's this horrible depth of rolling ocean between me and them. But I was attracted to the story, as you know, with When the Killing's Done, because mm-hmm. of the fight over the ecological restoration of Santa Cruz and Anacapa Islands. That is, the killing of the invasive species. And while doing that research, I came across two historical stories with regard to San Miguel. Mm-hmm. And I've written a fairly straightforward, non-ironic, non-comic novel mm-hmm. about three women, actually, who lived there right. over a period from 1888 until 1942. And I got this material from an unpublished diary, in the case of the woman from 1888, and then a pair of memoirs from the Lester family who lived there in the 1930s.
Yeah. So, non-ironic and non-comic, was this, did you set out to drop the irony and drop the comedy?
Michael, as a fellow English major, you will know that a writer has to change and change it up and shake it up. Any artist mm-hmm. does. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you repeat yourself over and over.
Yeah.
And it just seemed to me that this material would be better served to be told in a straightforward way rather than using my usual sarcasm. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to see how that would work. Now, I've written short stories mm-hmm. In a non-comic mode, and I wondered how it would work in a novel. Now, it wasn't the easiest thing in the world for me to do, and I will say that as a corrective, the next one is going to be your basic hairy-chested man's novel, because this one, of course, is entirely from the point of view of women.
Yes.
And I did, while composing it, I did wear a skirt.
Have you enjoyed the point of view of women? I mean, because perhaps some of these same English critics may have mentioned that there were not a lot of women characters in your book, and they didn't. And when they appeared, they didn't say a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But
well,
they tend to dominate.
My wife is my chief critic, and early on yes. in my career, she said to me, "Well, your women characters are flat." And I countered brilliantly, I think, by saying, "Well, so are my male characters." but you know, over the years, I think, you know, I've gone from being just a story writer to a novelist as well, and I think, you know, I hope that I'm stretching my boundaries. And with this one, I took it as a challenge to try to understand the point of view of the three women in the story. And I should quickly point out for your audience, the first story, 1888, is a woman called Marantha Waters. She mm-hmm. was upper middle class, living in an apartment in San Francisco with her second husband, her adopted 15-year-old daughter, and a cat. And the husband, Will Waters, convinced her to take the $10,000 from her first marriage, her husband had died, and invest in buying into this island. So they were the sole possessors of this place. He brought her down there. He told her it would be great for her health. Incidentally, she was suffering from tuberculosis. San Francisco, as we all know, is almost as cold as Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And he told her that to come south to this island, it would be tropical. It would be great for her. But in fact, because of the situation in the ocean currents of San Miguel, it is pretty bleak, windy, cold, and miserable. And she only lasted there about 6 months before she had to go back to shore to recover.
Right. And then she died.
And then she died.
Yeah, I don't mean to give anything away here.
To all of us, sadly, even when we do begin as zygotes. And by the way, you and I have that in common, you know.
Being zygotes at one time?
Mm-hmm. I too began as a zygote. Yeah.
I just don't have the elephant seal thing.
Give it time, Michael.
Well, we can't see him from here. I guess that'd be the difference. So, and it's a very interesting story as well. It's a bit on the bleak. I mean, this is about as Irish as you get, I think, in your writing. It's bleak because there's suffering, there's dying.
So. I wish I had better news. And my greatest challenge, by the way, which, you know, now I've written a book from the point of view of women in a non-comic mode.
Yes.
That was a challenge. My greatest challenge will be to have a happy ending. And, you know, I was talking about this with my friend Pablo Campos the other day. Pablo is an artist in L.A. whom I've known for many, many years. I said, you know, Pablo, maybe I should write a novel about a novelist and his friend, the painter, and they take walks on the beach, and they get very rich, and they're very, very happy. What do you think?
Did he like it?
He thought it was a great idea.
Yeah, yeah. Make a better painting.
And incidentally, I should point out, too, I know you've got a large audience there, but if people could keep this under their hats, my next project, after the Hairy Chested Man's novel, I'm hoping, I don't know if anybody's come up with this yet, a series of teenage vampire novels. What do you think?
I don't think so. It's not going to
Don't
work.
Think it'll sell?
It's going nowhere. Take it from Feldman. All right. Okay. And so, all right. And then, you know, one of the things, the background of this, though, is like this place is almost unlivable to begin with, San Miguel, right? I saw a picture of the San Miguel woods or forest, and there's no trees. There's just these calcite little stalagmites.
The other islands, sheep ranching did in whatever vegetation there was. Yeah. The island is coming back now. The sheep have been gone for 50 years, but the damage remains. So there are a lot of sand dunes, blowing sand. There are no trees, naturally, on the island. It is bleak, but quite beautiful. And, you know, what fascinates me, you asked earlier about this idea, is to be apart from the rest of the world. You know, the people who live there, the second family, the Lesters, for instance, Herbie Lester, the husband, was known as the king of San Miguel.
Right.
It was just him, his wife, and two daughters. It's kind of, and this was during the Depression as well, when, you know, the country was in great turmoil. It's quite fascinating to think that you could be apart from everyone else, not have to pay taxes, not have to obey laws, make your own laws, have your own kingdom.
Yeah. Was that the end of that thought?
Well, I mean, it's not quite possible in the world today. There are a mere 7 billion of us, but in its day, it was quite attractive proposition for both these families, particularly for the men. The women, as often is the case, had to go along and attempt to embrace their husband's vision.
Yeah. And for years, I mean, not just San Miguel, but all these islands, there was sort of like a paradise out there at sea that people saw. I mean, they made it to California, which is supposed to have been milk and honey, but they wanted to go further, and there are these islands out there, and they envisioned them as being the place where they could, you know, finally find nirvana or something. And it never turned out to be that way for anyone, apparently.
I suppose so. Santa Cruz Island was privately owned until 1986. And the guy who lived there established quite a beautiful place.
With the exception of Santa Cruz Island.
Under the rule of the Nature Conservancy, the original house remains. There was a vineyard there until Prohibition did away with it. This vineyard was going from the 1880s on. Hmm. It is quite idyllic and quite beautiful. And, in some cases, people really throve there.
Okay, I'm going to retract my statement then.
But not on San Miguel. I mean, San Miguel was far bleaker, which, of course, is why I wrote it and circles back around to your comment about the bleakness.
Yes.
Yeah, I suppose, things don't always turn out beautifully. And even if they do, we all die anyway, and nothing matters.
There you go again. You got to stop that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, again, you know, I don't know what my stories will be or what the themes will be. I am constantly exploring these themes of us as animals on this planet and what it means and why we're here and so on. Mm-hmm. I should say, too, that maybe I'll talk to you again next year because the second volume of my collected stories will come out next October.
Good.
Another big fat door stopper of a book, and I've just written 14 new stories, so it's not simply a compilation.
Excellent. I do have another idea for you, and I try to give you ideas all the time, and usually they're for outstanding characters.
Well, thank you. Thank you. And, you know, I'll give you 0.001% of the royalties if I use it. Is that okay?
That would be more than enough. Door County. Now, you know, you got your Channel Islands out there, and here in Wisconsin we got Door County. We got Washington Island, which has many fascinating, the lost Dauphine, you know, from France. Was supposed to have landed there, and they never...
Wait a minute, Mark Twain already told this story.
Oh, he did? Okay, never mind.
Huckleberry Finn. No, I'm sorry. Go on. Go ahead.
No, you know...
It sounds great.
Yeah, it's perfect. And they got Egg Harbor there, where they're actually there was an egg fight in the harbor, hence the name. Washington Island, Death's Door is out there, treacherous, a lot of things going on up there. So I'm just saying keep it in mind.
Well, it sounds great. I'm not going to have to learn French, though, am I?
No. You just have to learn Wisconsinese. That's all.
By the way, I was just in Buffalo last week. You know, I'm an international celebrity. I lead a very, very exciting life. I was in Syracuse and Buffalo.
But at the same time?
Mm-hmm. Well,
almost simultaneously.
A day apart. My wife is a Buffalo gal, and over the years I have become fluent in Buffalese. I'll give you a sample if you like.
Sure.
Viet Fliet Kiet. Got hit by a car. What do you think? Can I pass?
I don't know what it means, but it sounded good to me. What do the English say about that is what I want to know.
Yeah. Or the French, for that matter.
Yeah. Now, okay, let's go back to the book here just for a second, the novel.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually really a trilogy, you might say.
Yes, there are three stories. As I mentioned earlier, we have Marantha Waters going out there with her 15-year-old daughter.
Right.
Marantha died 2 years later. The daughter, as in some horrible fairy tale, was dragged out to the island by the stepfather.
Yeah.
And she had to live out there with just him and two ranch hands. And this is a girl who had ambitions to be a musician. Did she realize them or not? I'm not going to tell you. You have to go read the book, folks.
Yeah.
But anyway...
Inez. She became Inez.
She made her cook and clean and so on.
Yeah.
And she was now 17 years old, is attempt to escape this island. Mm-hmm. Then the third part of the book, as we mentioned earlier, is about the Lester family.
Yeah.
And
the Swiss family Lester.
The correspondences between the two families, the stories, were quite amazing. For instance, Elise Lester was also 38 when she came to the island, and also was marrying a war veteran. This time it was from the First World War, Herbie Lester.
Yeah, sure.
She was elderly at 38, a spinster, a librarian in New York City. Here came Herbie. He swept her off her feet, and he had a vision of living on this island. And even though she was so very, very old at 38, she managed to produce two daughters, which also... coincidentally, began as zygotes, as I understand it, and they prospered. They really did well on the island and became quite well known. Life magazine did a story on them, the Swiss family Lester and such like, because people, again, during the Depression, were very fascinated by this family that seemed to be able to be self-sufficient and live a beautiful life in a beautiful place, apart from all the turmoil of the world.
Yes, and Haile Selassie gave him braids.
Yeah, this is, you know, all this stuff is true.
Yeah.
When I give you historical bits in my novels, it's because the actual truth of it really fascinates me.
Mm-hmm.
When the Italians invaded Ethiopia, Herbie, who, and this should set off some bells in readers' heads, was a gun collector. He wrote to the Ethiopian embassy and volunteered his collection of 30 guns and himself as an instructor to go over to Ethiopia and help Haile Selassie beat back Il Duce and his armies. Nothing, of course, came of this except that one day, way out here in this remote island, you know, a ship would come by once in a while, and a package was delivered. And in it was were some epaulets and a letter of commendation from the Emperor Haile Selassie.
Yeah.
Hard to make this stuff up.
It is. It is. And they did achieve worldwide fame, didn't they, as the Swiss family Lester, and they were in Life magazine, but it didn't do them a lot of good, but they were world famous.
Yeah, again, Michael, you know that we novelists need to inhabit stories that have a lot of sex, misery, and tragedy in them. And unfortunately, Herbie, for all his optimism, suffered from what today would be called a manic depressive state or bipolarism. And he veered from one mood to another, and this was a little difficult on poor Elise, with ultimately tragic results.
Yeah, we all die, though.
You might recall that the Japanese shelled our country during World War II, the first time anyone had actually shelled the mainland since the War of 1812. Right. And by the way, when I was in London, I made that very comment and paused and asked the British audiences just what country it was that bombed us in 1812 and burned Washington to the ground. At any rate, it was here in Santa Barbara where just after Pearl Harbor, a month or so after, a submarine captain from the Japanese Navy came into this channel, the Santa Barbara Channel, and shelled the Elwood oil fields, which sit just a few hundred yards in from the shore. He didn't hit anything, but caused a lot of panic. And this was the spelling of doom for the Lester's happy tenancy on San Miguel.
Yeah. It was then the Navy moved in, and they put two guys there with...
That's right. They made them put up two young sailors to keep watch and so on, and life changed for the worse.
Well, it's a good one, San Miguel. I enjoyed it, Tom.
Well, thank you. As a fellow English major, I take that as a high compliment. And
I didn't like
you know,
the
most of those
use of
critics
certain
you were
words,
referring
though.
To earlier.
That
they
careening.
Were physics majors, I think.
Yeah. Was there any careening in this book? I don't recall if there was an actual careen in there. No.
You know, I don't recall either, but I'm going to, now that you've pointed this out to me, I'm going to have a lot of careening in every story from now on.
And you're the guy to do it, I got to say.
Well, thank you.
Yes. T.C. Boyle, ladies and gentlemen, San Miguel, the latest one. Thanks very much, Tom.
As always, thank
best,
you, Mike.
Yeah, best to you. Here's the book. That's what she looks like. Okay.